Hello, Dominic in Amsterdam.
Hi, Katie in Paris. And hello, listeners joining us from Europe and beyond. Sounds like I'm speaking about people in space.
Beyond.
How are you, Katie?
I'm good. Can I just say, I've been blown away by the response to something that we talked about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, which is when you were on holiday, Dominic, and our producer Katz was standing in for you. Katz brought up the fact that an epidemic of slugs has been attacking people's gardens across what seems to be a very large stretch of this continent.
Including mine.
Including yours and Katz's. And the response that is being discussed on the podcast, I have never seen anything like it. On basically all of our social media, people have been like, never mind all of these elections that you keep talking about. Finally, the Europeans are discussing the story that matters, slugs. Apparently, it was a problem that the media hasn't been paying enough attention to.
I mean, Katz and I have been shouting about this for months now, so I'm so glad the penny has finally dropped. I went out walking the other night, and I could barely take a step without treading on slugs. It was so disgusting. And I really think it is a serious story that actually has implications for biodiversity. So we're going to talk about this more, okay?
Okay, what, now?
From now on. No, today we're not going to talk about slugs specifically, but I think if we take anything from this, it is that people do want to hear more stories about the land. So that is what we're bringing you this week. For the rest of this episode, we are taking you to a farm in Hungary.
We've talked a few times on this show over the past year or so about the politics of how we grow our food. But the last couple of times, it's been in the context of like how giant agricultural companies dominate our food systems. But in reality, the vast majority of the farms on this continent are much, much smaller than that and run by families. This week, we wanted to bring you a personal story about how debates over what farming should look like are actually playing out within one of those families.
Lutze is 33, she's an artist, and as you'll hear, she's been taking increasing responsibility for her grandparents' small farm near Budapest. Except, she and her grandparents have very different ideas of what to do with this piece of land.
This is the ninth and final episode of our long-running series, This Is What a Generation Sounds Like, in which we hand the microphone over to young Europeans to tell their own stories. This episode was produced by Katz Laszlo and Lutze Borsos. And it opens with Lutze's first memories.
First memories. There is definitely food that my grandma made and eating them. What's the name? It's like a type of a donut. They're crunchy, so they're not soft. They're crunchy. And very sweet. So it's also like this taste memory, but also like the sweat of the horse or the smell of the pigs or the sound of the pigs when they are about to eat and my grandpa is cooking the dinner and they're all screaming loudly.
Ever since I can remember, we've been going to help my grandparents on their farm. You might be imagining some old farm in the middle of nowhere by a lake. Just you alone with your olive trees and a couple of deer strolling by. Well, that's not the vibe. The farm is in a village called Ashonémedi, with neighbors peering over the fence on either side. It's not massive, mostly vegetable plots. But there is a stable, a barn, a greenhouse, and plenty of big, rusty metal spikes and barrels lying around. Leftovers of a more active farming life. There used to be pigs and horses, but now we just have chickens. It's 1 hour drive away from where I grew up, Budapest. As a teenager in the 2000s, Budapest was the best city to live. I really, really enjoyed. There's so, so much to do. We were kings and queens living in the city, just really owning a very alternative way of living. Like sneaking in to swimming pools, climbing up on random half-done buildings and watching fireworks, dancing, going to parties and going to the school from right ahead, reading interesting books, going to lectures. It was very nutritive. We lived in the suburbs of the city. My mom had studied special education, and she taught at an alternative school close by. Me and my brothers, we all went there. We were encouraged to learn in a playful way, in cooperation, kids with and without disabilities learning together. The area was beautiful, hilly, green, and plenty of wealthy families as our neighbors. Certainly a world away from the childhood my mom had had, helping out my grandparents on their farm where she was born. But farm life was also part of my life. We went almost every weekend.
Our summer vacation was going to the grandparents. It was a big difference that I didn't go to ski or I didn't go to the beach. I went to the farm to pick the potatoes at 5 o'clock in the morning. But it was our vacation.
This is how a split started for me. One that's followed me until today, torn between farm life and city life.
In childhood, it was part of our life and I didn't question it and it was fun. And when I was a teenager, I did not really feel like doing it. I was more like sometimes I went to the morning market from a party, you know, like I did it because of an obligation. And on the way back, I was doing public transport and I was afraid to meet anybody with the dirty nails. And I didn't know how can I combine it. This city girl who's like wants to be an intellectual artist. And then at the same time, this farming, which was in a way just different. And dirty, you know, like there was something stuck in my brain which couldn't connect these two words in my teenage years.
And did you feel shame? Were you ashamed of the
Yes, farm? Yes. Yeah, that part of my world is not so educated or it's not so advanced, you know. I don't know what's the correct name for the pig slaughter day, but you do that and there is my job to like clean the intestines for 3 hours and the following day my hands still smell like pig intestines and I had to go to English class on the Monday morning. It's just like, it's two so different worlds.
This split wasn't resolved until I left Hungary for a while. Fast forward to when I was 20, I decided that the next step in my free artistic life was to go and live in Spain. First, I was just going out. I danced, I had lovers and friends, and I partied a lot. And eventually, I studied performing arts. I loved the movement classes, and bodily expression became the most important artistic tool for me. And while I was there,
political consciousness and feminism really landed to me in Spain. With my roommates, we started to order, like there's this basket of vegetables you can order from local farmers. It was not only that you make your order.
You weren't just buying stuff. Together, the people who ordered vegetables also ran the whole operation.
At the pickup point, where the farmers brought the vegetables, they bought like everything, and we need to do the baskets. So this family had 2 alcachofas, 2 this, 2 that, and I really enjoyed it, of like being part and still being in the city, but like, oh, and we buy our things, and they're like organic, and there was this community aspect of it, and it just felt good. It landed to me. Oh, it's so interesting because it landed to me from a political point of view. Getting something into your own hands and not what I knew from my grandparents, that this is your world, you need to sacrifice your life and be in pain and just do it because you have to do it. But like, what? It's so interesting. I never thought about this way.
That it became a symbol of freedom.
Yes, that I found it sexy there because it was a symbol of freedom, because it was a symbol of autonomy. So interesting. It flipped and I had to go away.
And yeah. then you came back.
And then I came back.
I felt like I was missing the lives of the people I loved. Breakups, my brother growing up, people getting sick. And I was just not there. And so I decided to move back. It took me a while to find my feet. I needed to rebuild my Budapest life in a way that it fits together with how much I changed. I studied and started working in applied theater, using theater as a tool for social projects. I collaborated on performances about the male gaze, mental health, burnout in the activism world. And most recently, I spent half a year working with youngsters who'd grown up in foster care, learning how to express themselves and tell stories through drama. This work means a lot to me. I began to find my flow. But you know who else found their flow in those same years? Populist Prime Minister Viktor Orban. He and his government have changed way too much in this country. And it's super frustrating because they systematically cut all the funding for independent and critical art. But exactly this work has never felt more important.
Knowing that there are the tools and the profession and the creativity, how important is that? That people can recognize their own creativity and connect through that and share their stories and feel not so fucking alone in this world and realize their own values and release stress through playing and laughter and learning from each other's stories or cry together or laugh together or share, yeah, just the difficult emotion and say like, yes, yeah, still, again, you're not alone. Again, you're not alone. But I still, you know, like I just listen to myself and I'm talking from such a privileged position that I can even consider that, oh, and these things we need to get paid for, and because in other parts of the world, it's not even coming up that you can live as an artist.
I really believe that art and creative expression can change us, and that it can change the world too. So at the same time, my grandparents were getting older and they were not able to take care of the farm anymore. So I was going there more and more often, caring for both them and for the land. But I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Being around my family isn't always a walk in the park.
I did move there in the winter when it was needed, and I did feel very conflicted, like, where is my life? There is a part of myself screaming, where is my freedom? Where is my own life? Where are my friends? And it still feels aligned, but it feels painful just because you're choosing to do something. It doesn't mean you feel that it's always 100% aligned.
What makes you do it?
It's not a decision in the head. It's a belonging. I don't know. This is my people.
But feeling like an important part of a family system again and taking care of the land, I found that really grounding and satisfying. And slowly, the farming started to draw me in more and more. And at the same time, my grandparents' health was just only getting worse. So it shifted from me just helping out to me making more and more choices and decisions about what to plant or how to do it. I really love that.
Well, first I find it beautiful. So there is beauty in it. That you see this garden growing. It's taking care of someone. And seeing growing from season to season and changing and basically giving you vivid colors and tasty food. And so there's pleasure in it, which feels good. And then there is a sense of autonomy. You're proud that, oh, we did this. This is possible. It's there. It's tangible.
Just like art, I really believe that growing your own food can really change you. but it has different things to teach. The farm itself has been teaching me how I need to really care for it. But I cannot and I do not need to fully control it. Letting nature do its thing, it's offer better than anything I would do. It's humbling. But I have to admit, it's not the romantic Instagram story of being in touch with the land, wearing your perfect gardening outfit.
I mean, it's physical work, it's field work. It's not that I do it until it just feels good, like using the tools. Like I had so many blisters in the last years, or just the mosquitoes, or the sun, and just the infinite amount of work.
My grandparents have been doing this infinite amount of work their entire lives. They were born into a very different context. My grandpa was actually born right here, on this piece of land, all the way back in 1934. And my grandma? Same village, 1941.
So it didn't look like this.
So in the 60s, they had in the winter minus 20, minus 24 degrees. In 40?
41?
Ez volt. 40 fok hideg volt. Minus 40. Oh, Jézusom. Wow. They couldn't heat up the house, so the water which was left in the storage room was always frozen.
Akkor a hó volt, hogy elég.
Snow?
Alagútat véfett.
So there was... So the neighbor, they couldn't go back to the stables because it was, the whole garden was full of snow. So they, 2 meters high of snow. So they had to make a tunnel to go to the stable to get the hay for the horses.
Wow.
In the neighbor. Both of my grandparents were born into farming families in a time of war and scarcity.
Maybe there was one pig per year, which was caught, maximum two. And then you need to manage with that meat.
And was there always enough food?
Hogy de volt mindig elég étel?
Volt, persze.
Yes.
Főle összeventett erre falusi embernek.
In a village, you manage. If not, you have potatoes.
Baromfi, you have volt tojás.
You have potatoes, you have chicken, you have eggs. And then you live with that.
Általában minden háznál volt.
She said they were still living a better life than comparison to other people in the village because of her mom went to the city to sell her stuff once a week.
My grandma's mother was a very smart trader. During the war, she would make fancier dairy products like cottage cheese and yogurt and walk all the way into the city to sell them to richer people. They might have been better off than the neighbors, but it's not like that. They were swimming in abundance. What felt like privilege to her, a pig a year and infinite potatoes, is very different than what we would call privilege today. And of course, not long after World War II, in 1949, the communist regime began. Collectivization policy required farmers to give the vast majority of their land to the government. And this went on all the way until 1989. Then the regime ends, and the capitalist boom happens. This is so much change in one life. And not just politically. They've seen the arrival of industrial pesticides, fertilizers. They've seen how now you need to water all your plants constantly all summer because the rain and the groundwater is just not enough anymore. I mean, we are lucky, we have a well. But what if that ever dries up? It's over. I have been informed by the political moment I was born into. We are in the middle of a climate crisis. The time when we are being deeply and painfully confronted with what our human tendencies of extraction have done for the world. And our political leaders, or the big companies that make our food, they're just not meeting the task. I've been experimenting more and more about how to grow our food in a way that doesn't exploit our planet as much. And I did a course in permaculture. That's a kind of farming that takes care of the land at the same time as making food. So basically, instead of seeing yourself, a farmer, as lord of the land or humans above everything, you position yourself as just one of the many species in the ecosystem. And that means a lot of what you plant is not just directly for you. You can also plant things that take care of the soil, feed the insects, or shelter hedgehogs.
So first of all, it looks very different. From their eyes, more chaotic. From my eyes, more natural way for growing.
My grandparents, they have been shaped by a completely different political moment.
So but everything they did, they had to do it in a way that they get in the smallest amount of place, the biggest crop, and they can go to the market and sell. For them, an organized garden looks like there is nothing else, so it's clean. It's soil, and only the useful plants are there.
Being independent of what the government gave you, that meant autonomy. And for me, growing organic food for the people and the creatures I love, investing in a long-term, healthy, resilient ecosystem, that's autonomy. You can see how this gets us into conflict.
I'm not here enough. She doesn't like the course I did.
Ott voltak a fóliák.
Because
képzelheted,
hogy
mit hordtunk a piacra. Paradicsom, paprika, minden.
And there was a much bigger amount. There was bigger prosperity in older times, and she doesn't see that.
Annyit árunk, mi bőle.
They think. Mert
egy nyáron 100,000-eket árultunk a két fóliából.
They think I'm not going to sell that much as they did because I'm not making it so prosperous.
Baromfinak valamennyi két-három zsák kukorica lett volna.
De azt beszéltük a nagypapával, hogy visszaengedhetjük oda őket.
Mennyi trágyát hordott te?
Hát jó,
baromfi ólat,
jó, de látjátok,
pucót, ott pucót, onnan is, hanem a kertre is köllött a trágya.
Hát igyekszem lépésről lépésre haladni. They're not satisfied.
Kevés.
Hát igen.
Mi?
Picit örülsz, hogy itt vagyok?
Hát.
Are you happy a little bit that I'm here?
Nem akarok arra menni, csak azt
sem tudom, hogy itt vagyok a számba. Nem akarsz megnyugtatni engem.
Nem, ha együtt én onnan azt akartam, hogy
vágjál
egy buktáta, vagy utat,
Sometimes our fights blow out into the open like this. But sometimes we avoid the conflict and just sneak around each other. While recording this story, producer Katz and I were working on a bed of potatoes when...
Oh no. Yeah. I wanted to leave that plant.
Oh, he's getting rid of a plant.
He's getting rid of that plant. I think it's a bodza. It's elderflower. We just randomly grew there. And I was super happy it just randomly grew there, but he doesn't like it, so he takes it out. It's done. Why to walk up and say, you know, I wanted to keep that, or you should not take that out. He has his reason why he's doing that. This was their main job first. If I start to get too intellectual in explaining, I lose connection with them because it seems like I want to explain them something which they know much better than I do because they live their whole life in this. And I'm an independent artist. I didn't study gardening and I grew up in this, but I'm like just a enthusiast explorer in the garden who has the luck to have a field to experiment with. It isn't worth it for me to just prove that I'm right, because maybe I'm not right either. And in parts, it also, it's their life source.
My grandparents' health is getting so poor that some months they can barely walk.
That's the frustration that they're living in, that they see everything,
but they cannot do it anymore. He was suffering so much throughout the winter that he was like inside watching TV, you know, like, it's too much. And this ability to, like, now he went for the big tool. This is a project. He went it, he took it out. Somehow, like, what worth more? The elderflower, or that he still keeps himself active in thinking what could be done in the territory and what are the things that he still has the ability to do it. That said, 20 minutes later, once my grandpa disappeared back into the house, I was thinking, maybe if my grandpa just threw that that elderflower on the compost, maybe I can rescue it and plant it somewhere here at the back. That was my idea. I fished out the elderflower bush and planted it as far away from the house as possible. It's still thriving, by the way. We really didn't understand each other with my grandma. She was like, why you need to do this way? And what's the point of trying? And then I remembered that she also experimented a lot of things. My grandma grew as many rare type of plants and flowers as she could get her hands on. She was a pioneer of celery and broccoli in her village. That, and she is a master of plant multiplication. Just last year, she grew a whole pomegranate tree by seeding from a fruit I brought her from Lidl. So I could tell her, like, Grandma, I'm just like you. You were experimenting a lot, and look how far we got. And let me experiment my own things as well. There's a lot of similarities in my grandma and me. Maybe this is why I cannot stand somehow her stubbornness as well, and the way she wants everything under control. It's like, especially like in the village, everybody talks about each other as well. It's so important for them, like, how clean is the yard? How clean is the house? And then they see that we are good people. Are we messy people? I think sometimes what they see now, it's a representation of not caring. And that's my caring. But the good thing is that my mom is very good in it, like, not giving a shit about it. My mom is like, nobody has anything to say. What do we do with this land? It's our thing. We are trying. And I want big bushes around it so I can pick my potatoes in bikini and nobody's watching. Yes, our dream is to do the whole thing half naked, but we are not there yet because people see us on the from the road.
Ah, and the neighbors? We get on, but we don't see eye to eye over politics either. And I'm not surprised because the radio they're listening to, that's shouting propaganda and hatred 24/7. I can say, oh, I don't pay attention, but it's not possible because it's so loud, it's everywhere. I'm there in the garden and my neighbor is listening to a radio station I would never listen to, but then the news comes and I only need to hear anti-migratory slogans. So it's a very strong message of, oh, we are trying to erase everyone and every thought and every position that is different than us. The thing is, it is personal. My boyfriend, Ben, he's from Ghana. We met while volunteering, finding accommodation for people who were fleeing Ukraine right at the start of a full-scale invasion. I don't know where this relationship is going, but I've never felt like this with anyone. But my home government? It's just not famous for its hospitality. How welcoming is this country? If the person I love doesn't feel welcomed, then where to go? Like, do we choose to stay here because this is where I came from?
you know, it's not a decision that we need to add now, but it's there in the air. I just, there is a lot of hatred here. And I wish it's gonna change. But I don't know how fast we are moving. It's personal. It affects. The moment he named it, that I fear that maybe this country doesn't really want me to be here.
I'm feeling torn because I want to commit to my home, but this government is not committed to me or to the people I love. In this country, it's so washed up with this nationalistic right-wing bullshit that I never wanted to identify myself. So unfortunately, it also somehow like excluded calling yourself a patriot or like, what is my Hungarian child? And it was always like a no, and I don't want to do that. But actually, slowly I started to see that what my belonging and my heritage and my connection to this country is that connection to the earth and that exact tradition or soil and work that my grandparents and their grandparents has been doing. And I understood that maybe there is my link to my home and to my country. And this what matters also for me in belonging. There is a word, so you can say home, which is otthon, or country, ország, but there is another word, which is haza, which is, it's something which is more filled with belonging. It's a home with belonging, which you'd say to a nation.
There is all this Hungarian context, and I would like to believe in it, that it, this can be the place where my dreams can come true, but maybe it's not. Will we be happy here? Crazy ideas. I know it's very far, but if I have children, will those children be welcomed in a village like this? And that's breaking my heart to say it, but maybe no. So if my relationship develops and it goes further and it's getting beautiful, then maybe, and maybe yes, maybe we can make this area more colorful. But I don't know, because I don't have children and I don't have friends with partners who are, I don't know how it is to raise a mixed child in the countryside of Hungary. And sometimes he said, yeah, let's move to the Hungarian countryside. No worries, I'm going to be friends with everybody. They're going to love me. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be nice. And he's going to bring his music and everything. And I wish that's going to be our reality, but I don't know. I have other people actually from this village, gay couples, and they live in the Netherlands. They don't live here. They're from here, but they don't live here.
I do not want to give the current government the satisfaction of taking away my roots or my dreams. So yes, maybe it looms over my head, but damn, I'm not going down without a fight.
Self-sustainability is political. Oh, I'm going to cry on that. But going through with the whole things with my grandparents is political, like dedicating my time. Because things are so designed for minding your own business. And also, I think that's what I got tired of it, like to be the independent artist who is achieving this and that. And this is like what disgusted me so much. It's like me, get to me. And now lately, like, what about my family? What about my community? What about my land? Where do I put my focus? Am I joining this race?
You just had tears in your eyes when you said it is political what I'm doing with my grandparents. What was the thing that, like, put the tears in your eyes?
Because I feel that things are designed for being separated. And I think like standing up for community and for family, yes, it's political, because then it becomes community, and in community you're more powerful and you're more independent, but not in solitude, but in community, and you're not depending on the bullshit state that maybe it's sitting on your head.
I do stand behind my choices, really. But that doesn't mean I'm never afraid.
What are you afraid of?
Losing my freedom. Mm. Losing my spontaneity. Losing the random, losing the whoop, this just happened. I just leave, I just go. This spontaneous. Like, is this something which is being sold and implemented in my brain, like freedom and like exploring my world is just like a sexy fantasy? Mm. Or is it like a true desire? That is, I mean, like, how, where do I put it? At the moment, I can have the answer that where I am, right here, right now, it does feel aligned.
This episode was written in collaboration by Lutza Borsos and me, Katz Laszlo. Lutza was your host, and production and sound design came from me. Mixing and mastering magic came from Wojciech Oleksiak. Katie Lee and Dominic Kramer were our editors, with support from Wojciech. Thank you so much to our collaborators at Allianz Foundation for funding this episode and, in fact, this entire series. And of course, biggest thanks goes to our supporters on Patreon and otherwise, who are generously helping keep this podcast going. I really mean it when I say we could not do this without you. The music you're hearing now is Odu by Deva. She is a Hungarian musician you should absolutely go and check out. We also featured her songs 777, Fa, Lenny, and O. I'm going to absolutely slaughter the Hungarian names, but additional music was Marsh Warbler by Cosmo Sheldrake, Palinka by Monika Lakatos, and Hangok Tsigani, Zene Buddhismus by Akazdet Fiai, and Arcade Ride by Vens Adams. Music also came from Blue Dot Sessions, sound effects came from freesound.org, and last but not least, our theme music came from the wonderful Jim Barn. We are away next week, and we are slowly winding down for our summer break over at the Europeans, but we will be bringing you a behind-the-scenes show the week after next, recorded during our team meetup in Warsaw, a very rare occasion, when we're actually in the same place. If you are a supporter of the show and you've got questions about how we make this podcast, please feel free to send those in. Bis later!